Hi there, and welcome to the Proud to Be of Rust and Glass podcast. We've had an amazing couple years talking with Toledo area creatives of all types, from poets to writers, musicians, artists and filmmakers, songwriters, rappers, and performers of every kind. We now have the pleasure of talking with someone whose love for all things lit has changed the face of many creative social circles, Leah McNaughton-Lederman. Thanks for calling in today. You want to just jump right in?
Yeah, sounds great.
Amazing. So you are currently residing in Indiana, but you have roots here in the Toledo area. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Yeah, certainly. I lived in Toledo for 25 years. I went to college and grad school there. I grew up there, definitely. And as an adult, I moved here to Indiana. And I think as a creative and a writer, what it's allowed me to do is kind of double dip a little bit. I'm a part of the writing community here. I've inserted myself in several different communities. But then it's like I get to go back to Toledo, and I've done readings there, and I've worked online with Toledo writers. And so I feel like, you know, it just broadened my reach, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I've had the opportunity, like I said, to read there. I've become involved with Of Rust and Glass. So it's like going backwards in time. I do regret, I had been invited to a writing group when I was like 17 or 18, and so I was really dumb, and I didn't join. And then now I find how I could have started so much sooner had I taken advantage of that. And of course, you can't regret it because this is the choice I made. Mm-hmm. But I just wish I would have inserted myself much sooner. And so I feel like I'm making up for lost time.
Oh, yeah. And you learn from those things along the way. There's plenty mm-hmm. of things that I've turned down that I think maybe I shouldn't have done that. There's also a lot of things I've done that I think after the fact, like maybe I should not have wasted time with that. But, you know, there's both sides of that coin for sure.
That's encouraging. I like that way of looking at it.
And I know I've had you here with me in a couple of events, bringing you back home. And that's always, mm-hmm. it's always good to see you in the Toledo area. And,
right.
You know, from cons to author fairs. And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It feels like, hey, guys, I did it. I did that thing that I'd always wanted to do while I was here. You know, I'm making, so.
Even though your physical body is in Indiana now, I feel like a lot of people do end up in one way or another coming back home to this area, which is really cool
yes.
to see.
And there's such a cool artistic community in Toledo. Mm-hmm. I think it's just incredible, the kind of artwork and the spirit of the artists and writers and creatives there. It's really enthusiastic. Mm-hmm. They really pummel their way through, so I appreciate that.
I love it. Beyond that, have you seen any tangible differences between the creative communities here and where you are now?
That's a good question. I have found, and I may be incorrect, I may be generalizing, but my husband found this too. When we moved here, we found that the people in this area tend to be just a little bit more subdued, mm-hmm. a little bit quieter. Just so I don't know how to exactly mm-hmm. articulate it, but you know, I'm very boisterous and loud and obnoxious. And my husband is too. And I felt like people were like, oh, okay. And they responded to us. They were kind, but they were just a little more laid back. And so when I go to Toledo, there's a lot of like, in your face. There's a lot of just like louder artists. Here the creative community is, they're just as enthusiastic, just as deep-souled. But they're just a tad quieter. And that's the only thing I can notice in terms of difference. In Toledo, I feel like I'm in touch with a lot more artists and things like that, whereas here I'm much more focused in the writing community. So I don't do quite as much. I have a smaller, more focused community here.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. I've done a lot of trying to intermingle artists and writers here too, and that's not necessarily something you see everywhere. Usually it's mm-hmm. got the artists over here, we got the writers in their basements over there.
Yeah, and that's such a cool thing. That's what I really love that you've done with Of Rust and Glass. And it's kind of what I tried to do with my Cafe Macabre books. I liked the idea of the intersection mm-hmm. of art and writing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And those are very cool books where you have women writing horror stories, but also including art and things like that mm-hmm. alongside them.
Mm-hmm.
So
I thought that was
a really cool concept. How would you describe yourself as a writer?
Not organized. I have like
are any of us?
just Yeah, right. Well, no. Some of us really are. Like, having met, you know, many different kinds of writers, mm-hmm. there's always that big argument between outlining and pantsing. And I think, like, maybe I do outline, but all on, like, separate post-it notes and emails to myself, things like this. But I think I am the kind of writer where I follow where the work leads me. I've worked a lot with a writing community leader here in Indianapolis, Barb Shoup. And she was the one who just kind of, like, she just said, it's okay to do that. Sometimes I'll be just pummeling my way through the essay, and sometimes you just have to do that. Mm-hmm. Other times you just have to set it aside a little bit, mm-hmm. just give it some time. And then, I guess, for instance, right now, just to give you an example, I'm working on a book about being squeezed out by warehouses and having to move. And I'm kind of going through chronologically, and it's working. But right now, I feel like I need to set everything aside, and there is one particular thing I need to write about. Even though it comes at the end, it's like that's where I am being led. So I follow that, and I also definitely, especially with creative nonfiction, I don't write as much fiction, so maybe this is the experience of some fiction writers, but I write for discovery. I'm really trying to get to the heart of the matter of... sometimes, you know, there will just be a certain memory you have that really, really bothers you or just sticks with you, and you can't figure out what it is about that. And, you know, the more you write about it, the more things come up, and you start opening up that memory, kind of like the pensieve from Harry Potter. You really dump yourself in there, and you're just like, oh, you know, this was a huge discovery. I just found out something about this myself, the person I had this experience with, or the moment itself. So I really write aiming for that more than a product. Because if I write for a product or a publication, I start to become dishonest. And so I have found that I always have to pursue the honesty there. No matter how ugly it makes me look or someone else look, I've got to get to that. So I think that's a big part of it. I think through my writing, that's what, was it Dorothy Parker? I never remember who it was attributed to, but she said, how do I know what I think about something until I've written about it? And that's definitely where I come from. And I always just write with the faith that I'll figure it out, that it will come out. And once I've gotten that kernel of truth, then I can clean it up and make it into something worth presenting to other people.
Were you always as self-aware a writer as that, or did it take you a while to learn that that's sort of the path that you wanted to take with your writing?
Oh, I think it definitely took me a long time. I think, you know, for a long time when I would sit down to write, I would just be really flowery and really just trying to make it look good.
Trying to prove that you can write, right?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And, you know, I always use the term, like, that's your writery voice. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're surface level. And so I just kind of learned through repetition and definitely through working with writing groups how much you have to dig and find that truth. And I think I wasn't always working towards discovery or truth. I was working towards making myself look good and look like a writer. Mm-hmm, so I think coming away from that was a huge step forward for me.
That's beautiful. I know you do a lot of creative nonfiction. Beyond that, though, do you have specific genres that you're, you know, drawn to? Or
yeah, I've done some fiction. I've written some short stories, but I think I found the last one I wrote for Cafe Macabre, the second volume, I really felt like I just want to put this down to rest. Mm-hmm. I have an idea perhaps for a novel in the future, but I think I'm just very aware I am not in that frame of mind right now. I'm really, really enmeshed in creative nonfiction, and I'm trying to keep it that way. But I do also, and this is hilarious, I went to a reading. A friend of mine invited me to a poetry reading, and I said, you know, you're aware that I write prose, right? But she wanted me there, so I'm there with all these poets, and I read, you know, the beginning of one of my short stories, and it worked. But then the owner of the venue came up and was like, oh, you're a writer. I want you to write poems for my newsletter. And I'm like, I'm not a poet. I don't write poetry. Like, but she just kind of like ignored me and was like, write me poems. So I felt like this is an opportunity I can't really pass up because it's a local art center right in downtown Greenfield here near where I live. And, you know, here's an opportunity to be a local writer. Right. So every other month I write a poem.
So how's the poetry coming then?
It's been a really interesting experience because I think that that's where I can use some of that flowery language and, you know, come straight off the top with the metaphor or things like that. And, I pare it down. I do think I tend to write very directly. But, you know, when I'm writing creative nonfiction, there is an economy of language is a phrase I hear a lot used with flash fiction and things like that, where, you know, words have to do double time, double the work. And I think poetry is really like that, especially in this instance, because they have to be 9 lines or less. So I don't get to sprawl and stretch my legs. I have to really, really, really get down to that concentrated bit.
Cut, even afterwards, right?
Yeah. And I know that some poets can really tell a story. And sometimes I've done it. I can frame a teeny tiny little memory, just an exchange. Like I would write about something my daughter said. And so there is a little scene in that poem. But I also notice, like, I'm driving down the road and there's this whole field of dead sunflowers. And it's such a powerful image. Like it really, really struck me. And I thought, I can't really turn that into, I mean, if I were writing fiction, I could make that maybe part of the scenery or something. Right. But this was like, no, this is a poem. I just want to write about this image.
You look off the road and you see an army of wilting giants and you're inspired, right?
Like, it was really, really, I think that inspiration is a good word. Like poems are more like inspired by something so specific and something so small that I want to make bigger, whereas I think creative nonfiction, these things I'm working on are these huge swaths of time or themes, and I have to explore a little bit more. I'm not sure if that makes sense, but this just kind of been my approach to these different genres.
I love it. Well, don't tell Johnny you're writing poetry. I'm not sure she'll let you go with that one.
Exactly.
Do you find any themes or topics that you keep revisiting in your writing?
Yeah, definitely. I noticed when I wrote fiction, I had a couple of themes of mental illness. You know, like these characters weren't quite right. And I wondered if that was because it allowed me to take certain things in my own life and just distance them a little bit. Like I'm still writing about them. And there's always, of course, real life, you know, I think many fiction writers pull from their own lives and put it into fiction. And I think that that allowed me to do that. In one story, a short story I wrote, you know, there was a character, a little boy who suffered from mental illness. And that was at a time in my life where I was discovering in my own family some issues with that. But it was too soon and it hurt too much to write in a nonfiction way. But I still needed to process it. So I put it into fiction.
Right.
But I notice, especially in my poetry, I write a lot about nature. I write a lot about like these moments that I see, murmurations or, the sunflowers, cracks in the sidewalk, or I guess that's not nature. But
well,
nature
is typically what cracks the sidewalk. So.
Yeah, I know. Thank you for that. Right. But fireflies as well. So a lot of things just from the natural world. And then family comes up a ton. Obviously, that's all of my memoir is family and their effect on me and the different ways I approach different family members. And then I also write a lot about memory itself. Not just, you know, my memory of going to the Vietnam Wall, but how our memories shape us, how they're formed, what things we attach ourselves to, and the way that those attachments are tied to memories we might not even realize. Mm-hmm. So I tend to just be drawn again and again to those things.
So you are not only a writer, but you have also dabbled in the world of editor.
Mm-hmm.
Those, I think we've talked on this show a couple times about how those two things, even though they're integral to each other, are completely different acts.
Oh yeah.
How do you separate your writer's brain and your editor's brain? How do you decide when and where to use each of them?
I don't know that that I keep them as separate as many people do. Mm-hmm. You know, I said I wasn't really a planner or an outliner, but when I approach a new piece, I am very selective of what I'm going to include and what needs to be there in order to drive that forward. So I'm kind of already sifting through before I begin, or, you know, what things I do need to include. And when I write, I'm very careful. I struggle a lot with sequence, where mm-hmm. I'll have things out of order and it just doesn't quite make sense. If you can pull it off and do it intentionally, it works. But when when it happens accidentally, it can be funky. So lately I've been having my editor brain on while I'm working and just saying, boom, 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 boom. These are the things that happened. I do correct my spelling as I'm going. I hate the squiggly lines. But then I ruthlessly edit my work when I'm finished, or even throughout. I cut out whole bits, and of course I keep them in a separate file because, you know, they're genius.
Right, right. Every word is genius and important and world-changing, right?
And then I go back and I was like, it's like the thing you write at 3 in the morning, you know, in the middle. I was like, what does this even mean?
It doesn't make any sense, especially when you take it out of context, right?
Yeah. I approach it with kind of a, what am I going to include and what's extraneous? I notice, you know, you start to recognize your own patterns, mm-hmm. Words you use too much or things you rely on too much. And so I'm very hard on those. I recognize them, or I try to, and I've gotten better at that because as an editor, it's so much easier to see other people's. Mm-hmm. Where I'm like, oh, you do this too much, you know.
We get blind to the things that we have spent so much time with. So,
right, exactly. And so, knowing that and recognizing that in other people's writing has helped me keep a closer eye on, you know, my own foibles. Not that I, you know, of course they're still there, but I also noticed what I would be editing, the things that I could pick out the most and that I was hardest on were the things that I did in my own writing, and be like, look, I do this too, and it doesn't work. Just trust me, it doesn't work. And I think also having worked as an editor, this is difficult, but I have had to learn humility in knowing you need someone else to look at this and give you feedback, mm-hmm. you know, because how much I have helped other people along with their writing and developing their story and drawing out what they're really trying to say, I need other people to do that for mm-hmm. me as well, and say, this is what I think this essay is really about, and this is how you need to shape it. I mean, and it's completely transformed the work itself, the essays or the chapters, mm-hmm. and then of course it's helped me grow as a writer, because then I, you know, you level up and you start to look at your own work that way. So there's, you know, the intersection between editing and writing, I think the two go hand in hand. And some editors really turn off their editor voice. I don't think I do.
Yeah, there's two pieces of advice that spiel sort of remind me of. One that you get when you sort of become, you know, like an engaged and practiced writer is not editing while you go.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you bring up a good point. There's a really fine line. Like if you're putting page after page after page of garbage on paper, mm-hmm. sometimes you need to go back a little bit and edit. It's just kind of recognizing on when that's becoming a dangerous game, when that's starting to hold you back a little bit more.
And it's, there can be even, at least in my case, I'll admit, like some self-indulgence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have this really cute aside I want to tell you. And I've had, you know, feedback groups just say like, no, like, yeah, this is cute, but this is not the time to be cute, or this is not the time to lament, you know, whatever there is. So there's a self-awareness you have to have, where you do have to cut some parts of you out of mm-hmm. it. Like, this doesn't fit here. Mm-hmm. Put it somewhere else or make it into something else. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it all has to really serve the truth, the point of the piece. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't, you have to mercilessly cut it. And I have fought it so hard. When I first joined this writing group, I remember, man, they just hammered this piece. And I thought it was done. I'd been working on it. Actually, it had like 13 iterations. I had had the idea like 2 or 3 years prior. So I thought, oh, I finally got it. And when they looked at it, they just, this doesn't fit. What does this mean? What is this? And I was so mad. Oh, they're so wrong.
And they sent you home with way more self-loathing than you wanted, right?
Oh, well, see, the self-loathing comes later. For me, the indignance comes first. I will just, the kind of person I am, I'm like, oh, you're so wrong. And I've had writers react to my edits that way. But I think, you know, that's the whole thing is when you've received edits, you can be mad at first, you can be hurt, mm-hmm. and then you got to kind of go lick your wounds and then put your big girl pants on and go back and go, oh my goodness.
Right.
They really were right.
Yeah.
And that yeah.
the other piece is, you know, we have our stories and our ideas and we have them in our minds as one way. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't always mm-hmm. translate to paper. Even if
right.
we read it back to ourselves, we may think that we're conveying this idea or this image
yeah.
or this concept that we've been thinking about for months and months, but mm-hmm. you need somebody else to look at that and be like, hey,
yep.
what are you doing here?
That's really it. I mean, this piece that I worked on, I don't usually work on something for 5 years or more.
Mm-hmm.
I think it actually may have been more. I think my first draft was 10 years ago, and then I finally got it published about, you know, 2 years ago. But, yeah, it was just I was trying to cover too much, and so I just kept having to whittle down, and here's what I'm after. And it was a long and painful process, but oh my goodness, did it help me grow. So I'm very grateful for that one.
Good. A lot of these conversations that we've had on this show and with you as well so far always come back to communities. It always comes back mm-hmm. to, you know, I found these people, I found this group from mm-hmm. there. They helped me recognize this. They helped me sort of, like you said, level up.
Yeah.
And you've mentioned a couple in Indiana and here in Toledo.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to take a couple minutes to talk about some of the writing communities that you're involved in and how they've changed
yeah.
your processes and who you are as a writer?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think the first writer's organization that I ever actively pursued, like I took creative writing in college, and that was it. You know, there was mm-hmm. nothing else. And I, like I said, I'd gotten invited to that group and I didn't do it. So when I moved to Indiana, somehow, I don't remember why or what, but I was like, I need to be writing. I need to check this out. So I, you know, actively looked for it. I Googled, you know, writing organizations in the area, and the Indiana Writer Center is kind of the premier writing organization of Indy. So I would take a workshop, and the workshop would kind of like light the fire and inspire you. And I would go and I would write. And then it falls away. And you kind of need to re-up by going to another workshop. And, you know, I would meet people. In fact, I met someone there who I ended up interviewing with for a teaching job. So, you know, you start kind of inserting yourself accidentally into a community. In the Indiana Writer Center, I would look at the people teaching, and I was a composition instructor at the time, and I would think, oh, boy, wouldn't it be really cool to teach one of these classes? So it kind of gave me a goal, something to work towards. It's not just that I'm, you know, was supported by writers or supporting writers, but I could see a future growing. And then with Midwest Writers Workshop, it is hilarious to me because this organization was just one surprise after another.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I accidentally stumbled into this community. I got invited to the board and was like, wow, what? I'm on a board? I'm a grown-up.
And now look at you with that community.
And yeah, and you know, all I did, this is what I feel like happened, is when the director sent out emails or wanted something proofread, I would do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say, okay, I'll do this.
You showed
and
up,
not
right?
That other, yeah, and not that the other board members did not, but I just, you know, I think I just had a certain maybe connection with the director, or I'm not sure. And so then I became her assistant. She got ill and just needed a little bit more help. And it just kind of kept, like, what's the word with the ball rolling, like gathering moss or what have you. And then when they asked me to be the director, I was absolutely flabbergasted. You know, going back to my goals that I had at the Indiana Writers Center, I saw Barb Shoup, the director, and was thinking life goals.
Mm-hmm.
That would be so cool to be the director of a writing center. But I was thinking it would be like, you know, when I was a grown-up, like, you know, like 10, 15 years down the line, you know, this was a pipe dream. And so that really just flabbergasted me. I feel like with Of Rust and Glass, I kind of wheedled my way in and did the same thing. Like, you need me to proofread? Yes, I will proofread. You need me to talk about it? I will talk about it. And, you know, that's just like you said, it's just showing up. It's showing up and not just for yourself. Having this idea of, if I'm going to grow and get better as a writer and a creative, I need other people as well. So please come join us, you know, help us out. The more people there are, the more we can, you know, drag each other along kicking and screaming. But it helps, you know, hey, I just wrote a poem. And then you're like, oh yeah, maybe I should create something. Mm-hmm. When other people around you are creating things, it may, you know, it's contagious. Mm-hmm. And then I think lastly, I've become a part of the Greenfield Writers Group here where I live. That's just been amazing because in all of the other communities, I don't live near the people. Even the Indiana Writers Center, a lot of them are from downtown, which is 20 minutes away.
Right.
So here is this. These are people who live in the same place. They go to the same Kroger.
Yeah, virtual spaces are amazing and allow us to do a lot of things we never could have done. But there's something about doing
real
those things with your
people.
Neighbors and. Yeah.
Oh my gosh! I found out one gal in my writers group here in Greenfield. You know, I would write these like expletives on her paper because it was so good. You know, and I would just be so excited and enthusiastic. She's writing this fantastic chat book, and then I find out that she's my son's English teacher.
Imagine that.
Like, sorry, I was swearing on your paper. This is really good.
I'm extra glad in this case that the expletives were because it was good and not the other way around.
Oh yeah, no. I would never do that.
I know you
would. I think one of my strengths as an editor, I'd like to think, is there is kind of a gentleness you have to have. You know, like, I'm not going to just skewer this.
Us writers have egos that need to be stoked, you know?
Yeah, it's just the whole, you know, the cliche they always say, you know, it's your baby. But, you know, there's a truth to it.
Mm-hmm.
There have been some times though where I'm like, I know it's your choice in the end. It's your piece of writing. But I'm like, but this really has to go. But otherwise, I'm like, hey, it's your work. You know, you don't have to take my advice. You can throw it out, and that's okay, too. But, this writers group in Greenfield, it was also just cool to see, like, wow, yeah, just like I said, like, they're creating really phenomenal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these people who have lived, I've, you know, passed them on the street and didn't know. And so it's just discovering, you know, the bounty that's around you that you're unaware of until you reach out to support other people and you show up. It's been pretty cool.
It's a really beautiful thing. Do you have any advice to anybody listening who might be struggling to find their own creative community?
You know, I think it's a lot of what I just said is you have to seek after it. You have to Google, you know, write. I'm using writing, but, you know, you can do whatever your creative, you know, genre or medium is, and you seek it out. We have Google. Go to your library. You have to find an artist that you know and say, hey, are you a part of anything? And in order to seek after it, I think this is really important, that when my writing, I'm not going to say like skyrocketed because it hasn't ever skyrocketed, but I had to say to myself, like even out loud, I am a writer. Because before that, had, you know, I'm a writing teacher. I'm an editor. And then finally, I had to just, no, I am a writer, and take yourself seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that in mind, it was like, I'm not going to go to this writing workshop as a hee hee ha ha, this is kind of cool thing. I'm going to go here and really insert myself and show up until they kind of start recognizing me. So take yourself seriously, seek after a community, then insert yourself there, show up, be supportive, not competitive, or if you are competitive, at least let it drive you forward. I've kind of thought, like, I'm competitive, and that can be a healthy thing if I let it, you know, if I make it be, but it's envy you have to watch out for. Is, you know, if you're envious of someone, well, then up your game.
Right.
That's what you need to do. So I think that that's probably it. And once I started to take myself seriously, that was it. In the way I inserted myself in the beginning is I just went up to this lady after a poetry reading and said, hey, I really liked that poem. And then we connected on Facebook, so that helps out a lot. And we had a lot of mutual friends. We got to know each other. And then she invited me on the board. And it was like, you know, the rest is history.
Right.
And it all comes from I just went to this conference with a serious attitude of I'm here as a writer, not as a hobbyist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's not necessarily fun to take life too seriously, but if you're really pursuing something in earnest, you do have to take it seriously. So
right. I mean, of course, I'm very self-deprecating. You know, I'm always poking fun at myself and things like that. But I really had to say, like, no, I'm going to take this thing seriously. I'm finally going to, you know, button down and do it. And, you know, not wait for, that's a big one. You know, they always say, don't wait for the inspiration. Because I would do that, like, you know, every 3 years, I'd be like, oh, this is a good idea. Mm-hmm. And I'd sit down and write for 30 minutes. And it's like, nope, here's the thing where I really don't want to write. I'm really tired, but I got to get this done. So it's not always inspiration led. It's do the work led.
Mm-hmm. And I find if you do the work, the inspiration comes much more often too.
Yeah, it's a really good way to put it. And it's like, it feels like going to the gym. You know, you don't want to do it, but man, you feel better afterwards. And I really kind of trick myself into writing where, you know, I'm like, just set a 5-minute timer or 15-minute, whatever. And then, of course, once you start, you don't stop. Mm. Or at least in my case, it's like
3 hours passed, you realize you didn't eat lunch or, you know.
Yes. But if you think of it like, oh, man, it's going to be a 3-hour chunk of time. Well, then, of course, you're like, oh, man. But if you're like, oh, 15 minutes, just 15 minutes. And then even that, if that's all you did, you can say, like, no, I wrote today, and I feel lighter. And that's what I think you know that you're a writer is because you literally feel lighter and better having done it. Like, it's something you have to do. Mm-hmm. So
I love it. I think that is as good a place to call it as any.
Mm-hmm.
The advice and feedback that you've given us and you know, the creative work you're doing, not just for yourself but for other people, is absolutely amazing. I really appreciate everything you do, as I know many other people do.
Well,
as well,
yeah,
so.
I'm like, back at you, Curtis.
We do it because we love it, so
yeah. Right.
But I thank you so much for your time today, and can't wait to work on another project with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
This has been today's episode of Proud to Be of Rust and Glass. Leah has been instrumental in my own personal creative journey, not to mention all the literary lives she's touched here in Toledo and in Indiana. She has so much more to offer than a 30-minute conversation, and we're so, so fortunate to have her on the Of Rust and Glass team. Again, I am your host and producer, Curtis Dieter. Our executive producer is Chris Pfeiffer. If you want to join the conversation, check us out at wgte.org/rustandglass. Until next time, thanks for listening. Now go forth and create.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.